Hello? 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 Hello?
If you can hear this, it's not too late. I've returned to warn you. This is Time Pop, a podcast that discusses time travel and pop culture. There are spoilers. I've seen the future, and nothing is sacred to these folks. Your past, present, and future are sure to be ruined. Even if you could go back in time, as I have, you will never forget what you are about to hear. You've been warned. This is Time Pop.
We got to get into this. I got to talk to you about this. Welcome, Chrononauts, as we guide you through the experience of time travel using pop culture as our lazy boy. We will be your constants. I am Dez.
And I'm Ari.
And this is
Time Pop.
Today, we are discussing fetching Cody.
Yes, we are.
Ari, how much do you hate me right now?
Oh, boy. This might be the worst movie. Let me rephrase that. This might be the worst time. This is definitely the worst time travel movie I've ever seen, if not one of the worst general movies.
This is definitely the worst movie we've done for this podcast.
Yeah.
By like, how much would you rather watch? What's the one? Paradox. Is it Paradox? Was it just
Predestination?
No. Was it just called Paradox? That was way, way back in the day. We did an episode more than a year ago now.
Oh, Paradox.
Were they trapped in the basement?
Yeah, this is worse than that one.
If I had to pay you to watch this one or suffer through Seven Splinters of Time, what would you do?
Wait, refresh my memory. Seven Splinters of Time was which one? We've done so many now.
Seven Splinters in Time was probably, it was one of our early ones. It was when I was especially trying to find easy to find episodes, and I was just on Prime and I was like, oh, there's something, we'll watch this. And you and Scotty got about 20 minutes into it and you texted me and said no.
Oh yeah. I was like, we're not doing this one. I can't even finish it.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. At least with Fetching Cody, I could finish it.
Yeah.
It was difficult, but I could finish it.
What? I mean, I guess there's only one art, so that helped. Well, really, I know what really ruined Seven Splinters in Time for you is seeing the different mustaches they had to tape on that guy's face.
Yeah, that was bad.
The Seven Splinters in Time is a way better time travel movie. Like,
okay.
It obviously suffered from being on a budget of $24.
Yeah.
It was I'm really glad I watched that. And I might do a solo podcast sometime just talking about Seven Splinters, because I still think as a time travel movie, it was really cool.
Yeah. So why did you pick this movie? I'm curious.
This is one. So I've been curating our list just based on internet lists, just because I'm like, I don't know what to watch. We've hit a lot of the high water marks. And so I literally just Googled best time travel movies and went down on page one of Google and just went through all of those lists. And of course, 50% of those movies we've done, and all of them were somewhere on my list. But Fetching Cody showed up on a couple of those lists of good time travel movies. And I don't remember reading through and reading why, but I'm like, well, if we're doing a podcast for internet people, then I should use internet people to help narrow down what we should watch. And this one I knew was going to suffer from some things, but the little bit I did read about it made me think that it was going to be at least a cool time travel movie, you know, because they talk about how he has to keep going back and fixing it, which is a lie. So I thought, well, at least it'll tie us in a knot and it'll make for an interesting conversation. But whew.
Yeah.
So real quick, so we watched Fetching Cody, released, probably not actually released, but they finished editing it February 24th, 2006 at a nice tight 86 minutes. I'm sure that helped get you through it a little bit.
Yeah.
And just to prove how not released this movie was, it's not rated. It is written and directed by David Ray, starring Jay Baruchel as Art, Sarah Lind as Cody, and Jim Burns as Harvey, And also, I had to write this down, features local drag queen Robert Kaiser as Sabrina.
Okay.
This is another movie, we haven't had one of these in a while, where the cast is deep, deep in credits. Obviously, a lot of movie credits, but there were, you know, Harvey had 130 credits. The mom had over 100 credits. The two leads had like 50 to 70 credits and are still working. And like, this is another one of those movies where it's just, it has a lot of very, well, I don't want to say good actors, but
working actors.
Yeah. Working actors and doing a lot of stuff. And this is a perfect example of like, you know, of what I think happens to a lot of time travel movies where it's interesting enough to get some real actors, not interesting enough to get, you know, top echelon, but it's easy to coax TV actors into thinking like, all right, this is a good movie, an interesting movie, let's do it.
Yeah.
And yeah. So those are our facts. I now am waiting in bated breath to hear Ari's overview of Fetching Cody, the Canadian phenomenon. Fetching Cody.
Yes. So this movie was very confusing to me. I just thought it was
so... it the complex plot?
Well, no. I mean, it didn't know if it wanted to be like more funny or more serious. I don't know. All right. So anyway, it's about a guy who is a drug dealer and a drug user on the mean streets of, is it Vancouver?
I think it's Vancouver.
Okay. The mean streets of Vancouver in the downtown area. And he has a girlfriend who is also a drug partakes in drugs. I was going to say partaker, but she's also a prostitute. And he knows this. And that's how she makes her money. And they are very in love. They're very adorable in the beginning of the movie. And then you see her getting into a car to go do a trick. Is that what they call it?
Yeah.
Do a trick.
I heard someone today, I won't say who, ask me about a pot cigarette.
That's how they phrased it?
Yeah. But yeah, you go find a pot cigarette and we'll go do a trick.
I'm gonna go do a trick. Yeah. So,
and he is an ex-trickster, whatever you want to call it, which we find out much later.
Yeah, he also used to prostitute himself out in order to get money to do drugs. So he sells drugs, he does drugs, his girlfriend does drugs and sells her body. And they live in the mean streets of Vancouver. And one day, or, you know, the next night, he comes to her apartment by sneaking in the window for some reason, and he finds her dead. And it looks like she's overdosed. But instead of overdosing, she's just in a coma and she's really sick. And the paramedics come right away, right after he gets there, and they take her to the hospital, and she's in a coma in the hospital. But before she went into a coma, before he found her like that, she had mentioned that, you know, high school was really hard for her. And there were a lot of girls that bullied her and basically told us and him that the reason that she dropped out of high school and then became addicted to drugs was because she got bullied a lot in high school. So our main character, whose name is Art, right? Art?
Yes.
He is very sad about his girlfriend being in a coma, and he comes across a homeless neighbor of his.
Someone he knows from the streets. It's very interesting because they're very well kept. You know, it looks like it's their first day of being on the street, but yet they know everybody. Like, they've been living this life for a decade.
Yeah. Yeah. That's why I had issues with the casting of this, because the main guy, he was way too like put together and clean cut to look like a drug dealer or a drug user. And same with her. She was, you know, like a normal person, but yet she was supposed to have been doing drugs for many years.
And like strung out.
Yeah, like regularly. They looked way too normal. Anyway, I didn't like that.
Yeah, it didn't hold together.
So his homeless neighbor friend guy who collects things says he has a chair, a very old reclining chair.
Harvey.
Harvey is his name. Thank you. And this chair has like Christmas lights, like the big bulb Christmas lights, like one strand wrapped around the outside of this chair. And he goes, yeah, this is a time machine. And Art's like, okay, whatever. But after his girlfriend gets in a coma, he goes to that chair and is like, I want to go back and help my girlfriend so that she doesn't become addicted to drugs. And then the chair turns on and zip, zap, zoop. He is back to when Cody, which is his girlfriend, is in high school, and he witnesses his girlfriend as a high school student get bullied by some other girls. It's an all-girls school because in gym class, while wearing white shorts, she got her period for the first time and was humiliated and I guess ended up dropping out of school because...
I think that's just... a turning point. Like, I feel like, I mean, they were already picking on her. And then once that horrible thing happened, that's probably what they just used to keep pestering her. And, you know, you're a nerd, you're a dork, and you're a bloody mess on top of it. Or so I don't feel like she dropped out that week.
Yeah. So Art decided that that must have been, yeah, a moment in her life that he needs to help her with. So he decides to go back to the present, get a box of tampons, and then go back to the gym class when she was in high school, and thus proceeded a sequence of incredibly awkward scenes of him trying to get her to take one of these tampons.
He's what, 25? I mean, we don't really know. Do you feel like they're 25, 30?
Yeah, and she's in high school.
And and he's a stranger in a girl's school with a box of tampons.
Yeah, let me just say this. I found these scenes just so, I mean, I'm sure they were supposed to be awkward, but just unnecessarily weird and clearly written by a man because... as a girl who, you know, knows about her period, we know, like, if you feel wet down there, I don't know. It was just, it was just weird. It was just, I don't know.
Yeah, it was a really, you know, this is another one of those things where it's like, you're the writer. You can do anything you want. It's not like you have to make it a tampon scene. Like, there's so many.
Yeah.
How can you not be 6 months into writing a script and go, you know, maybe not, you know, a tampon?
I bet you he thought he was being so original because no other movie has had a fairly long tampon scene of trying to get this teenage girl to accept a tampon because she's about to have her period for the first time. He thought he was being so original. It was so awkward. There are so many other scenarios that he could have done instead of dwelling on this, like, you have to take this tampon. No, you need to take this. Just take this. And she's like, what the fuck is wrong with you?
So in this process, he keeps going back. And is it during one of these go backs that she, the younger her, mentions her brother?
Yeah, at some point he finds out that there was an earlier event that maybe could be the moment he needs to save her. So his goal is to change her life in some drastic way so that she doesn't become a drug addict.
Because he goes back, gives her the tampon, then he comes back to the present, hoping that everything will change because of this moment in time that he thinks he's pinpointed, and they don't.
Yeah. And she's still in a coma in the hospital.
Yeah, nothing has changed.
So yeah, then he finds out that, like, something about a photo, the night the photo was taken during Christmas.
Well, first it's the brother.
Oh, the brother, yeah.
So first it's the brother, then he's like, okay, shit. Okay, what did the brother do to her? And so then he finds that pinpoint, goes back, and I was so, after the tampon scene and how awkward that was and the direction this writer was going, like, I am so glad we didn't get a gross incest rape scene. Like, the way this writer,
oh, I know,
I really thought it's like, okay, a little bit of heroin, a weird tampon thing, like, oh man, this is gonna get so gross.
Yeah, but instead it tried to make somebody shooting themselves in the head funny. It tried to make that scene comical. So then he finds out, he goes back to when somehow he knows the incident of what happened with her brother.
The chair knows. He's just like, take me to
that moment. So it's when her brother shot himself in the head in the backyard. So the first time he gets there and the brother shoots himself. The second time he gets there, he distracts the brother, but then he still shoots himself or something. And it was just trying to make that scene funny. And it just wasn't. It was so awkward again.
So then he finds out that brother is shooting himself because he's gay. And everyone found out he was gay because he got a boner in gym class in the locker room.
Yeah. So then he's like, it's okay to be gay. No big deal. I used to suck guys off just to get paid to get drugs. It's no big deal. And so then I guess the brother's like, oh, okay, great.
Yeah, that's the same thing. Being attracted to guys and paying for your drug habit are exactly the same.
So that's my point. It was like funny, but serious because some guy's shooting himself and you'll like see him shooting. You see like the brain and the guts and stuff and like the blood. And then he's like, oh, but yeah, I used to suck. Anyway, sorry, you're probably going to bleep that out.
It's not a bad word.
Yeah, it was just awkward again. So then he helps the brother. He goes back to the present. Cody's still in a coma. But at some point, he learns from Cody that something happened to her when she was 8. Like she got assaulted.
Real quick, just to, like I said, I don't want to dwell on this too much, but it's part of why this movie is so weird and so bad. So then he comes back to the present, then goes back to the past again and meets the brother at the boner scene instead of the gunshot scene and tries to distract him out of that locker room situation. So then the guys won't see his boner. So then he won't be so embarrassed. He has to kill himself. And then that'll change Cody's life.
Okay. Yeah. So then it didn't work. Cody's still in a coma. So then he goes back to when she was 8, apparently, to when she was supposedly assaulted. And they're very vague about how she was assaulted. And the chair takes him to the woods where an 8-year-old her is like playing with another kid. And you hear a scream, but then you hear some laughter. And then Art finds 8-year-old Cody like behind a bush with another kid.
What I don't understand, this is where I'm super confused. What made him go to that moment in time was a missing person sign that said Rose.
Yeah, I'm so confused by
this. Was Rose the little girl that they met at the
park?
Yeah.
In the very beginning, yes.
Yeah.
But how that told him that, or reminded him of a time when she was 8 that she got assaulted. So apparently the assault that he stopped was another boy raping her when she was 8?
Was going to. He gets there before that, but I think the assumption is that it led to
this other kid. He was like also 8 or 9 or 10 or something.
Yeah.
Raping her when she was 8.
Yeah.
Wow.
And which is dumb, but it was made even dumber by the confusion with the Rose poster that made him, I don't know. And the funny thing is too, what I kept laughing at is he's using this time machine. The time machine is obviously taking him into the past. He's making these changes. He's expecting drastic changes in the present and they're not taking place. And so he keeps claiming the time machine doesn't work. I'm like, yeah, it does. Like, you could totally go hang out in the 50s right now. Like, this f***ing time machine works. It's just not accomplishing your goal. And I don't know why that drove me so nuts. And he was very cavalier with who he told about this.
Yeah.
Like, he told everybody he knew, like, I had a chair, it takes me back in time, but it's broken.
Yeah, so he keeps trying to go back and forth to save her. And then at some point, he learns that, he goes back to the moment right before she overdosed in the apartment before he came home that first night. And as she's slipping into a coma, I guess he finds out that she shot up that night because he missed dinner. She, in the very beginning of the movie, she talked about, I'm going to make you dinner tonight. And he was late to dinner and that made her use drugs and overdose and slip into a coma. And the other thing that bugged me is in the hospital, the doctors kept talking about, she's really sick. She's got this sickness, this disease from sleeping on the streets, from living on the streets.
Well, I think it's just go. It's just easier for something to go undiagnosed. Like they were, as everything in this movie, a little weird and vague about that. But I think the living on the streets thing was just the, you know, you're not going to get a cough checked out when you're living on the streets.
Yeah, but they made it seem like, oh, it's not just the drugs that she overdosed on. It's all these other things that she's just really sick.
Yeah.
And it's because she's homeless. And at one point, Art was like, she's not homeless. She has an apartment. She lives in a place. And he was like getting upset. Like, she's not homeless. She doesn't live on the streets. Like, we live in a place. And he was like getting upset about that. So he, as she's slipping into the coma, he finds that it's because he was late to dinner. So then he travels back to.
So while he's there.
Oh, yeah.
So he gets there just in time after she shot up, and then she starts to pass out. And then that's when he hears himself coming up the fire escape.
Yeah. And he calls the paramedic.
And he's the one, because when he's first getting interviewed at the hospital, he's like, she unlocked the window for me 2 minutes before she went into this coma. Like, she's got to be fine. Like, she unlocked the window for me. Now we realize that it was he who unlocked the window. And then.
But why was he coming in the window anyway?
Because the manager of the building thought that he was turning tricks in the building. At some point, there's a half a line that explains it.
Oh, okay.
Which I was surprised that they explained that with everything else that's really random, but they got to that.
So he learns as she's slipping into a coma that it's because he missed dinner. So then he travels back to be on time for dinner, and he shows up with flowers and they have a great dinner. And then she, you know, dinner's great. They're happy. They're sitting in bed about to go to bed. And she's like, let's shoot up. And she reaches for the drugs, and he's like, hey, you know, why are you here? Why didn't you just leave downtown? They keep talking about downtown. And she's like, oh, it's because of you. I saw you and I instantly knew this is where I wanted to be. And so I stayed and got hooked on drugs and started prostituting. And so that's when Art realized that he needs to do the ultimate sacrifice for love and get her to never meet him. So he travels back to the first day where they met, which is Art and his buddy.
And what? Also, just real quick, just since this whole thing is about Cody. So while he talks her out of shooting up, she still slips into a coma.
Oh, yeah. Because she's so sick from living on the street.
She's got street disease. She got street virus.
Street virus. That's right. So the drugs didn't even matter. She still slipped into a coma because she's just so sick and nobody knew. And oh, goodness. Okay. Yeah. So he goes back to the day where they first met, which is Cody on the corner selling drugs. I'm sorry, Art on the corner selling drugs. And time traveling Art calls the cops on drug selling Art, and he gets arrested. And then a few moments later, Cody walks by and they never meet.
Dun, dun, dun.
And then traveling Cody goes back to the present. And when his homeless buddy asks, how did it go with Cody? He goes, who's Cody? So ripple effect.
Was it a ripple effect, or was he just trying to convince himself that he wasn't? I shouldn't say it was confusing. It was poorly written to me. I felt like there was part of it that, I don't know.
I took it as he didn't know who Cody was, and that it was a ripple effect. He never met Cody, but yet he's still in this guy's time traveling chair, and they get rid of the chair. And then there's like a scene where he gets on a bus and Cody's there and she looks totally different. And then the movie ends.
Because, yeah, Harvey tells him, too, when he's towards the end, when he's yelling at Harvey that the time machine doesn't work. And Harvey's just like, it does. It just takes like nothing is more powerful than time. And the only thing that's more powerful than time is love.
Yeah. So when I looked it up, it said this movie came out in 2005.
Yeah.
Five or six. Yeah. So this movie came out in 2005, and it is very similar to a movie that came out in 2004 called The Butterfly Effect, where the main character is trying to save his love interest by fixing her life, but then ultimately sacrificing them knowing each other because all her problems stemmed from her knowing him.
God, I didn't realize they were that close. God, that makes The Butterfly Effect such a better movie.
Oh my God. This is like exactly the same as Butterfly Effect, and it came out a year after. And they did such a bad job. It's such a bad movie.
This movie is called Canadian Monarch.
Yeah.
So yeah, I just don't even know. I feel like I'm on an episode of Rotten Popcorn right now. Like, I just can't wrap my head around.
I mean, was there anyone that actually liked this movie? Did critics like this movie?
No. Apparently time travel fans think, a lot of time travel things, thinks it belongs in, you know, somewhere on the list of, you know, time travel movies you should watch if you're into it. And, you know, there's a few nuggets. I kind of like the goofiness of the chair. I kind of got into that. I liked the spiritual nature of that. I liked the fact that it just took you where you wanted to go. You know, you didn't have to punch in the time code and the circuits. And
oh yeah, there was no science, zero science with this movie.
None at all. And because at one point he even, yeah, when he first gets back to Harvey's place, he sits in the chair and the lights are on. And for some reason that really upsets him. So he unplugs it and then the lights still come on. And yeah, and he says the first time he accidentally activates the time machine, he says, "Get me the fuck out of here." And the time machine just takes him outside. And then so he's like, what? And then does he go right then? Does he say, take me to Cody? Does he do one more test? Or does he say, take me to Cody's tampon debacle?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, this movie, I get what you're saying about the lightheartedness of the chair. And that's what it tried to do. It tried to be lighthearted and funny. And the main character, you know, that actor is like good at being goofy and awkward. But like some of the content and some of the scenes were like serious, like an 8-year-old girl getting raped or like a guy shooting himself because he's like, that's some serious stuff.
And these kids are strung out drug addicts, but not really.
Yeah,
like if you're gonna go that route, don't use it as a God, you're right, this is a shitty Butterfly Effect.
It's exactly Butterfly Effect.
Totally is. Oh, that bums me out even more.
Even down to the point where they meet each other, or they're at least near each other in the end, even though they don't know each other.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like exactly the Butterfly Effect.
Oh.
I can't believe you didn't notice that after watching it.
Yeah, it's because it didn't. If the ripple effect would have taken a place every, it would have taken place every time, I would have caught on more. But the fact that he went back so many times and nothing changed.
Yeah. And that's another issue. He changed like major things in this girl's life and nothing came of it.
That I liked that. I mean, I wish they had dug in more once he finally realized how he could change things. But like, I mean, like, it's like going back and like getting an A on that math test was going to make you an astronaut. Like, no, it's not. Like, at best, it would have gotten you an ice cream cone after school, you know?
Yeah, but preventing something like your brother shooting himself in the head when you were, you know, in high school, that's pretty major.
But she was already a little, I don't want to say fucked up because that's just, that's me being on a pedestal. Because she's already on medication before her brother shoots himself. She's stealing beers. And I kept trying to figure out how old she was. Like, is she in college now? And it's like, apparently she's like 15 and she's like stealing beers in front of her mom. And
okay, can you explain to me the Christmas scene with the blonde kid?
So the blonde kid, let me see if I can remember all of this.
So it's like he's in, I was kind of sort of not watching some of it.
Yeah, no, I started to zone out. The only thing that saved me was I watched it really, really late last night. And so I saved the second half, the last half hour for today. But so he was, I think what it was she was in love with him and he died or got fucked up. Maybe he went out and got on drugs or something. So he was thinking that was his first attempt at love, because he thought, this is before he knew that he was her true love. He was like, well, if I can keep her from falling in love with him, then it won't fuck her up so much when he goes bad. Because he's thinking because now the brother is still alive. So it must be this high school boyfriend that fucked her up for falling in love with her and then leaving her.
So the way that he was going to do that was by sneaking into the house, taking the Christmas presents that the boyfriend at the time had put there and replacing them with weird things and a note that said, "We're breaking up and your mom is hot."
Right. Again, an interesting idea. I like the idea of ruining that love relationship. But again, this writer had to get cute to try to... Wow, this is the first time you have taken a movie I didn't like and made it worse.
Yeah, I'm just saying a lot, everybody. Can I just say, Desmond likes or enjoys pretty bad movies. He is the one person I know that can find enjoyment in pretty bad movies. So for Desmond to say that this is a bad movie means that it's seriously a bad movie.
And not just, I don't just like bad movies because they're bad and hilarious. Like, I find something I legit like about it. Like, I like Zardoz, people. Bam! I dare you to watch Zardoz and like it. And I love that movie.
But you didn't like this movie, right? You thought this movie was bad.
I didn't. I didn't like this movie anyways, but I kind of... I mean, I still like The Time Machine, but, you know, you pointing out the butterfly effect thing, which I don't know how I missed that, really. And then, yeah, it's just... I knew the writing was bad, but yeah, you have just... managed to take what I already thought was bad about it and make it worse. And
I mean, this is probably a pretty low budget movie, you know, right?
Yeah, I mean, they had $1.5 million, which I know is low budget, but I mean,
still, they could have done better.
For that, you can, for $1.5 million, you can pay someone to go over the script one more time.
Exactly.
or get someone on set to be like, you know what? Maybe we should scuff his jeans.
Yeah, maybe we should, like, black out a couple of his teeth, give him some, like, sores on his face, you know, what actual drug addicts look like.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm trying to take a beat and see if there's anything else I can find I like about this movie, but I think I just like the chair and but what they did with the chair. And I do like, I like how hard he had to try to change something. Like, I like that he couldn't just go back and bump someone on the street and all of a sudden we have moon bases in 2005, you know. I thought that was interesting.
I do like the concept of having a love story tied into time travel where, yeah, you try to go back in time to help out your love interest. I've always, you know, had a soft spot for those kind of stories, but man, this one just made it so awkward. And like, I did not feel for any of these characters.
Here we go. Here's going to be my positive take based on our podcast.
Okay.
So the laws of time travel are fairly simple, as stupid as they are. This time machine, this lazy boy takes you to wherever you want to go, and you can't change things easily. You, like I said, so the laws are fairly simply time travel. And so because of that, in the time travel aspect of this, there are few holes. Now, in the script is an Afghan.
Yeah.
But the time travel.
Yeah. So the only like thing that they did that has to do with time travel and paradox is when he gets there before she goes into a coma and unlocks the window and calls the paramedic and then leaves. That's the only time they did any kind of laws. Is that what you're talking about?
I mean, I guess, yeah, just or any kinds. Well, no, I mean, just I mean, the laws of just how the time machine works.
Oh, yeah. There was no science in this whatsoever.
And so because of that, and because of the fact that the butterfly effect is almost non-existent, they don't come across. They only cross each other's paths twice, barely. And you buy it. Like, as far as time travel goes, them crossing paths makes total sense. They don't come in contact with each other. There's no black hole scenario. Again, if you have no science, you can't have holes.
Yeah.
And is this, I think this is the first time you haven't immediately started our post overview discussion with the time travel holes and paradoxes.
Well, there are no holes with this because, yeah, just like you said.
Boom! Best time travel movie ever!
Oh my God, no.
It's holeless! It's a perfect sphere of a time travel law.
Well, there's loopholes. So there can be the fact that, you know, he did all these major changes and there was no ripple effect, but yet he did do the one ending change and then it was a ripple effect. Oh, Desmond, you want me to find holes? I'll find some holes.
No. No, because I believe Harvey that it takes a fucking megaton bomb to create change, and love is the only thing stronger than time. And once he found out who her true love was, he then created change.
And the change was her never meeting him, so there was no love?
Exactly. Because he's the one that drug her down. It was her love for him that drug her down to the mean streets of downtown Vancouver.
So the ultimate sacrifice is what changed the timeline.
Well, it was finding out. Yeah, I mean, it's the ultimate sacrifice because that was the love that was stronger than time. Her love for her brother wasn't stronger than time. Her love for her high school sweetheart wasn't stronger than time. It was because he kept going. Her love for not being molested at 8 years old wasn't stronger than time, but her love for him was.
Yeah, all right.
It's beautiful. It's the most magical love story you've ever heard. Thank you for listening to Time Pop, brought to you by Sounds Awesome. Please like and subscribe and tell a neighbor or friend about it so you can share a discussion of your own on the topic of this movie. Please check us out on social media. We are at What Sounds Awesome on Facebook and Instagram, and at Sounds Awesome 2 on Twitter. You can email us directly with questions and comments at wesoundawesome@gmail.com. We would love to read your thoughts aloud on air, and definitely let us know about a movie you would like featured on a future episode. We have 3 great movie podcasts: Time Pop, where Ari and Dez talk about time travel movies; Rotten Popcorn, where Scott and Dez discuss films with vast differences between fans and critics based on Rotten Tomatoes aggregation; and Apocalypse Now, where Scott, Callum, and Dez talk about apocalypse-ish movies. Movies about society going through a difficult situation, not unlike the one we are currently living through. Want to check out some non-movie-related podcasts? Check out All the Answers. You have questions? The Record Keepers have answers. Cassidy and Katie have sassy comments. Who are the Record Keepers? You'll have to listen to find out. And our newest addition to the Sounds Awesome family, Truth Not Trends. Liam Bauer and Jesse Schmidt have a combined 35 years of strength training, and they are here to keep you strong, fit, and motivated through these difficult times. Please visit our website at whatsoundsawesome.com to find all these fine podcasts, or just search Sounds Awesome in your podcaster of choice to find these fine shows. Please rate and review. And now, back to the exciting conclusion of this episode. Did Scott watch this with you?
Yes. He agreed with me that this is the worst time travel movie we've ever seen.
All right.
Yeah.
He's
Thank
wrong.
You, Desmond.
Well, this definitely, I was going to do it anyways, but you're absolutely picking the next one.
Okay, yay.
Whatever that is. Pick from my list. Don't pick from my list. Whatever you want. You can trick me into something. So, I mean, I think especially when the effects on time are almost nothing, like, you're using this lazy boy, right?
Oh, for sure.
Like, yeah, to be able to go anywhere you just imagine, basically.
Yeah, for sure we're using this.
And this is the coolest, literally laid back time machine
ever.
This makes me want to do a hot tub time machine soon, because
we should do that one.
Yeah, you want to do that one next?
Sure.
All right.
I love that movie.
Might have to talk to Brendan about it. I know he had dibs on Hot Tub Time Machine. So awesome. That's Fetching Cody, folks.
Sure is.
I forget what to even say. Thank you for listening. Until next time, this is Desmond McNeese.
And Ariel Gala. Bye. and zip, zap, zoop,